Today is Tuesday, February 18th, 2014, and this is episode 55 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell, and joining me tonight, as usual, is Mr. Andrew Callett.
Good evening, Mr. Bell. Thanks for having me, as usual.
Thank you for being here. And also, as usual, the thoughts and opinions we express on this podcast are ours and do not represent those of our employer. And that's usually a good thing.
Past, present, or future.
Past, present, or future. Good point. Good caveat there. So, I only was able to very briefly talk with Bob. There was something about a hostage exchange going on, and I didn't really understand the context, but he did tell me that you may periodically want to make sure your firewall still has its rules loaded.
Oh.
Because otherwise it's just a router.
Oh my.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that apparently led to some bad stuff.
I think we should start referring to Bob as the most interesting InfoSec man in the world.
Yes, indeed.
I think we should register that Twitter handle before somebody else does.
Indeed. Well, so we actually we had a piece of listener mail. I was going to say viewer mail, but fortunately nobody has to look at us. This person should feel really honored because normally this show is not planned at all. Right. And this particular topic,
and actually, it shows
this particular topic actually got us to sit down and put our heads together and come up with something somewhat organized. So anyhow,
not good, mind you, not a good answer, just an organized answer.
Correct. Correct. We also make no representations to the validity or importance or accuracy or anything like that.
I will say, if you're unhappy with any portion of the podcast, you can get a full refund of your purchase price.
That's true. Plus 10%.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, see, we stand behind our stuff.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you.
Anyhow.
Continue with your introduction.
So we received an email from a person named Terrell Fairley. And the email goes like this. Can you pretty please elaborate on how we as technological security professionals can better present risks in business terms to management without digging into ALEs and or pulling out a box of crayons? What are some methods that are working for other security pros? Green, yellow, red on a risk assessment is great. But how do we effectively drill the message home in terms they understand? Great show, by the way. I tune in regularly, blah, blah, blah. So here we are.
Let me just say, huge question.
Yes.
Important question. One of the most important things that we probably have to do if we are doing anything other than just pushing policy on firewalls, except for Bob's firewall, which doesn't apparently keep its firewalls loaded. It's a tough question. We spent a lot of time thinking about this question, and I spent a lot of time kind of making notes and talking to other people about this. So let us, before we even get into this, say, I'm not sure we have the best answers here, but it's our opinion and it's our experience, and it's a big topic.
No, that's good way to start out. And one thing I would also start out saying is a lot of this is very situational based on the personalities in your organization. Because I would also say, in addition to that, where you are reporting and who you're trying to convince. Uh-huh. Because that conversation is going to be different if you're talking to the CEO or you're talking to the CFO or someone else. You know, they're each going to have very different perspectives on things.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just kind of start here, but you know, the key thing that to start with is that they're not like us. They're very, very, very different critters, and they think very differently, and what they care about is very different. So, in essence, you're trying to sell your own vision of what needs to be done. So the key thing there is you have to understand your customer. You have to understand their position. So, you know, one of the things that I like to pull out here is from Stephen Covey way back when he wrote Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And it's, you know, it's kind of rah-rah, but it's good stuff. And one of them is seek to understand before seeking to be understood. And this is just kind of a good general thing for all sorts of business discussions. But you have to understand a lot before you can effectively communicate to executives. And, you know, kind of going on the list, one of the first things I would say is that not all risk is equal, not all mitigation is equal, not all technology is equal, because no business is equal. So as Jerry said earlier, everything about this is situational. Everything about this is about your environment. I like to say that all security is like real estate. It's all local. So the first key thing here is you need to know your business. How does your business make money? What does your CEO, CFO, you know, CIO, you know, at the end of the day, what do they really care about? And that's producing whatever widget it is that your company does. How do they make money? And then when you're trying to communicate risk, how is this risk relative to that ability to make money? You know, and a very classic, easy example is, you know, you've got an assembly line that makes widgets, and that assembly line makes 20 widgets an hour. And, you know, you have machines that have no spare parts. Okay, you're now taking a risk that that assembly line can break, and it's going to take you 2 days to get a spare part in. Is that risk of having that assembly line down for 2 days worth it to the company? And you can quantify exactly how much production is lost in those 2 days versus the cost of having the spare parts versus the likelihood, the mean time between failure. And you can make that call. But here's a key thing to know. Executives sometimes take risks that we don't agree with and we don't understand. Everything in business is a risk. We're used to thinking about minimal risk, close to zero risk. Everything they do is risk. Everything. From hiring employees to taking on customers, everything. So in their world, it's not a black and white thing. It's all about what's okay to accept, what's reasonable to deal with. What is a risk I can avoid spending money on because that money can be better spent elsewhere? Conversely, what isn't? What can I not avoid? What is a risk that I have to take care of, that I have to care about? And that comes from their view of their business. If they make, you know, widgets and they're a pure manufacturer with no direct sales, they may not care if the website goes down for a couple of days. They don't impact them. But if you're Amazon, you damn well care if that website goes down for 5 minutes. So that's kind of my opening gambit. There's a lot more to talk about here, but I'll pause and let Jerry jump in.
Yes. So I think you're definitely on the right track. Agree with all that. Absolutely. I would also say, kind of carrying on that line of thought, is put yourself into their shoes, right? So if you are coming and asking for, I don't know, let's say $100,000 to do something, right? To cover some risk. In their mind, okay, there's a fixed amount of money to spend amongst all the different stuff that happens in the business. You know, I need to allocate a certain amount of money. So if you're telling me that I need to spend $100,000, I don't know, to keep the website up or to buy a new firewall or something, that now means that maybe I can't hire a new person to make more widgets. And so, you know, at the end of the day, it may in fact be the right thing to go and do that information security thing. But I think that the issue is, and I see this a lot with InfoSec people, is we get very myopic generally when it comes to risk. You know, we are very, very risk averse. Companies hire us kind of with the express view that, you know, we are risk mitigation, risk minimization tools, if you will. And
in the good sense.
In definitely in the good sense. And so I think we kind of get put into that box, and we don't sometimes see the bigger context. Now, I'm not proposing that, you know, we don't go and present the risks as we see them. I think the challenge is all about how do we put those risks into the context of your particular business. So,
well, let me ask you a question on that, sure. Jerry, because you the way you brought it up and phrased it, which I agree with, very much makes us sound like perhaps outside legal counsel who's advising a company. And at the end of the day, outside legal counsel job is to help a company make decisions.
Yes.
So why is it that legal representation gets a great deal more respect in general than InfoSec representation?
I suspect there's a number of psychological reasons for that. I think one is this is kind of the contractor boy, how do I want to phrase it, right? It's the consultant conspiracy or the consultant philosophy, right? You if you hire someone and you are paying them a lot of money, you implicitly put a whole lot more value on what they say than things that come out of your employees. It's been true everywhere I've ever worked, and it will probably will always be true everywhere I ever will work. And I think the other thing is that business people, especially people who have gone up through business school and whatnot, are kind of trained to pay attention to the legal, you know, the legal perspective. And, you know, I think it's much more akin to think about InfoSec as not necessarily as equivalent to legal representation, but maybe more to insurance. Mm. Right. Now, certainly it's definitely not that cut and dry, because, you know, a lot of times we as InfoSec people are the ones that are caring about your HIPAA compliance program or your PCI compliance program or what have you. They can't get you into trouble, right?
Right.
But
so didn't mean to take off topic on
no,
that.
No, that was a good question. Yeah. Let's see. So what next? Another thing I had written down here was, what kind of justification does your management expect, right? So if the whole point is, how do I convey a certain risk? And you know, the obvious reason that you want to convey that risk is you feel strongly that it needs to be addressed. I think part of what you need to do is figure out in what form do you need to communicate that? Because if you're the CFO, or if you're reporting to the CFO and you're going to have this conversation with the CFO, it's probably going to be a dollars and cents discussion. You know, how much is this going to cost? You know, what do we think the likelihood of this thing we're trying to avoid is going to be? And so, to Terrell's point, I think it's going to be a really difficult discussion to get out of the ALE kind of discussion, right? Because again, from the CFO perspective, IT or IT security is very much like him paying the bill, or him or her paying the bill for a business insurance policy.
Yeah.
And the difference is that InfoSec is kind of like, you know, it's an insurance policy that you just happen to be exposed to. You're exposed to the inner workings of it, whereas most other insurance policies, you they're just black boxes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and kind of taking that one step further, InfoSec is like a fire policy where you've got active arsons outside trying to burn down your building, and you know you're trying to buy enough water to put out their Molotov cocktails before they throw them. You know, the one thing that I think is important here, and we'll come back to that topic too, because depending on who you're talking to about this, definitely change your conversation. But what I would recommend in general is get away from the technology. If you use the term SQL injection with anybody with a C in their title, even a CIO, you've already lost your discussion. They don't care. They don't care about the bells and whistles. They don't care about the details. They care about the big picture. They care about the problem behind the problem. And what I mean by that is, so what's a SQL injection? What does that mean to my business? Well, it means somebody could break into the website. What does that mean to my business? Well, it means that they could steal information. Oh, okay, now I'm starting to care. Or it means they could deface our website and damage our brand. Okay, now I'm starting to care. They don't care about the whys or the hows. They care about the what. What does this mean to my business? And that is a key thing to communicate at the end of the day, is get away from the details of the technology as best you can when you're having this high-level discussion, and get into the business-level concepts behind it. What is the true end result at the end of the day of this problem occurring? Not the interim steps in between, because they don't care. They're big picture people. They got to worry about the big picture, right? And back to Jerry's point, they have people asking them all day long for money. All day long. And, you know, I'm not saying this is a good philosophy or a good way of doing things, but I remember once I was working at a company and, you know, one of the CEO or the CFO said, my philosophy is I say no the first two times. You come back a third time and ask, you probably really want it, and then we'll talk about it. I'm not saying that's a good way to manage anything, but I'm saying that that's somewhat the mindset out there. So definitely get to the question behind the question. And understand that a lot of this is a gut and a cultural thing in your organization. Your organization's willingness to accept risk of a certain level is absolutely key. I had a discussion with a customer the other day, and I was talking to the CIO, and I said, you know, that we were talking about a mobile device management, an endpoint security product. It doesn't matter who it was, doesn't matter what it was. But I asked this question. I said, on the two extremes of this product is 100% effective and locks everybody down and is 100% deployed, is that more important to you? With all the inconvenience, cost, and potential cultural impact, and users being upset? Or is it more important to you to have minimal or no impact to your users, minimal or no visibility of this new control being put in place, and a complete best effort with what you can cover in a transparent method? And the customer came back and said, no user impact, as transparent as we can get. And it's okay if we miss what we miss. That's an important thing to understand in that one little tiny use case across the entire organization with view of risk. What are they willing to tolerate, and why are they willing to tolerate it?
Yep, that's well said. One other thing, comment you made made me think of a visualization, right? So I think, it's particularly in some of the smaller companies, the executives have these shields that come up when the IT management comes around, because mm-hmm. we only come around when we're looking for money. And again, I think there's also kind of a sordid history where, in general, we haven't done ourselves a whole lot of favors because we haven't historically talked in business terms. And so, you know, I think a lot of these business people tend to be somewhat on the defensive when we come, because they know that they're gonna be drug into a technical conversation. And so I know one of the things that we talked about before, and you mentioned this, and I think it's a really great thing is to really work on your communication skills. In addition to what I think is very important, which is being able to speak in business terms. Because I think if you can communicate well and talk in business terms, you're going to be at the table and they're going to take you seriously. They're going to listen to what you have to say. Now, then it becomes, you know, what is your message?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I found when I was purely an operations guy and purely a security guy, one thing that helped my skill set in communication greatly was when I moved into a sales engineering role. And I was speaking much more, we're doing much more public speaking. That got me much more comfortable in communicating well, communicating at the level my audience needed to hear me at. Not, you know, where I could moderate the level of technical language that I'm using for my audience. And I'm not saying you dumb it down. I'm saying that you speak in a language that your audience will understand. That is the goal of communication, is to be understood. Not to impress them with you've got a bigger security stick than they do. It's use language. I mean, there are a lot of times that I've gone into meetings where I come off as a little self-effacing or, you know, not super technical because I'm trying to communicate with certain people in the meeting. And they've got the one guy in there who wants to, you know, play stump the chump. And then I can go real technical in a hurry. And so being able to moderate that level of technical depth in your conversation is critical for who you're talking to. You know, the one thing that I would say on this as well is, if you can ask your senior management, what do they care about? What are they judged on? What are they comped on? What is it that keeps them awake at night? What would be their worst nightmare? What sort of business-related things do they really need to keep running, right? Because we have our view, and we may have, you know, this view that, wow, we've got a huge vulnerability here with a DDoS. But if you ask them, hey, you know, if our internet connection was down for 2 days, how much would that hurt the company? See what they say. They might say, well, that would suck. All right. Are you willing to spend $1,000 a month to have a backup connection? Sure. Are you willing to spend $5,000 a month to have a backup connection and redundant routers and all this other stuff with automatic failure? No. Right? So you can start to gauge what it is they're willing to pay a little bit, right? Because really it does come down to money at the end of the day. Now, the key is that we're sort of assuming here too is that management is correct in their estimation of this risk. And I think part of the question that we're being asked in this discussion is, what if you're trying to educate them to make a better discussion, to make a better decision? And that is a whole level of complexity above that. And I think what that really, again, comes down to is you need to communicate the real world risk in business terms as best you can.
Yeah, well said. So I think it is difficult to get into that kind of a discussion without having some amount of data behind you. I mean, you can have a conceptual discussion about things like that, but at some point, if there is skepticism about, you know, well, you know, how likely is it that bad thing that you're saying is going to happen? How likely is that? Is it really as bad as you say? You know, if you've got that kind of a skeptical management team, it's probably going to take some amount of objective data, you know, to demonstrate your case. Otherwise, I think you can have conceptual discussions, kind of like you just mentioned, where you're really talking about, you know, what is the business impact of, you know, the email server going down, right? To you, it sounds like a really significant thing because, you know, email is really important to your business. But from the perspective of the management team, they might not care all that much, right? You know, if email goes down, you know, their perspective may be, hey, you know what? We'll, if it takes us a week to get it back up and running, you know, the business will go on, and it's worth that risk and for us to divert that money to something more productive. But, you know, if let's say, you know, the nature of your business is such that if email was down, you know, I think it's on you to communicate effectively. Well, it's not okay, because what you're not thinking about is that, you know, we will not be able to accept orders, or there's some really key business process that, you know, we've thought long and hard about alternatives and there really isn't a good alternative. And therefore, if our email goes down, we lose, or we have degraded production, and that's going to cost X amount of dollars. And, you know, and that's the right way to think about it.
Yeah. And, you know, they may not be aware that that business process even exists. So it does come down to educating on that. And it also may come down to prioritization, right? They may say, look, I've got 10% for my G&A budget. You know, and at the end of the day, InfoSec's going to get 2.5. So make some lists and get them in the right priority order. Right. And that's a difficult decision. Here's the thing that you really have to grasp, which is that they have the right to say no. And they may, and they probably will. And it's their company to do that with.
Right. And we're here to help facilitate them making money.
Right. You know, it is about returning money to shareholders. That's what business is about. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, right? I'm not trying to get into a political discussion, but they have every right to be dumb. If you know, so be prepared for them to make the wrong call. And we as InfoSec folks, you know, then it's on us to make a decision. You know, not to get really sort of nuclear on this, but if you're working in an organization where they really, really don't value information and security, and you see a crisis coming, you know, we have negative, you know, it's about 1% unemployment in InfoSec right now. That's all I'm saying. But understand that you're never going to win every battle, and you're never going to win most of your battles. It's a constant ongoing process. You may have to have that conversation 10 times before something gets done. Or a breach happens, right? And then suddenly they're all about knee-jerk and throw as much technology as they can. But be careful then. Don't overdo it. I've seen that happen a lot. So, you know, to kind of summarize what I was saying here is, in general, you have to have a good idea of what risk your business will accept in the terms that they're willing to talk about it. Because to them, InfoSec spend is an insurance policy. They're paying to mitigate a risk to a certain acceptable level. It's up to us to figure out what that acceptable level is and educate them on that level. But they want to minimize that spend. InfoSec is a cost center. You know, as much as vendors and others would like to say, it's very difficult to justify an ROI in InfoSec spend. Very difficult.
Yeah, it's generally not a differentiator, right?
Right. You know, but at the end of the day, look at what we just saw with Target, right? And this should come as no surprise. You know, a story came out alleging that somebody in Target raised a red flag about their security of their, you know, cardholder environment. I'll tell you right now, every organization I can think of has somebody raising a red flag about some aspect of their InfoSec. There's nothing special about that. There's nothing smoking gun about that. That happens every single day. It's just easy to, in hindsight, go, see, I told you so. Doesn't make the guy wrong for raising it, but it also doesn't make it unique. But that may be something that's raised 100 times. But keep in mind, your executive has 100 people coming to them with 100 different issues, and they have to pick and choose.
Exactly. You know, the other thing you mentioned, which jogged my mind about this, is that, you know, I've seen this mostly in the world of disaster recovery stuff. Most companies won't invest money in that kind of capability until something bad happens. You know, it isn't until after the bad thing happens that a company realizes how exposed they are. And I mean, I've had this problem a number of times in my career where, you know, we've wanted to spend some amount of money and, you know, the business has prioritized their spend in other places and something bad happens and suddenly it becomes a huge priority. And, you know, I think that's, you know, it's not different than if, you know, you don't carry a homeowner's policy and your house burns down. You know, suddenly you really regret not having that homeowner's policy. And I damn well bet you're going to have one going forward.
Yep. Very true. You know, this is something you've talked about before, but part of this is also making sure that the executives who are making this call own that risk.
Good point. Good point.
You know, the difficult thing here is when you're in InfoSec is if you're being given the responsibility but not the authority, you're in deep trouble. So part of this is educating them on the risk and then having them own that decision. So, you know, you've done your job to raise it, raise the concern, raise a mitigating control. If they choose not to do it, it's got to be clear that that's on them. Now, mind you, companies have their own politics and that may not work out at the end of the day. But
you can do what you can do, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the one thing we haven't talked a lot about is when this comes into compliance and legal and that sort of thing. That's usually a much easier conversation because they get that, right? They understand that's mandated by whatever compliance you're dealing with, and the fines and what and the audits are all very straightforward. So not to in any way mislead anyone, but I would say it really behooves you to make sure that you point things out that fall under that compliance concern.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I remember riding the Sarbanes-Oxley horse pretty hard. I'll tell you the compliance, the regulatory compliance thing cuts both ways. Because on the one hand, it's a really interesting thing we see right now. There's a big debate about PCI. And by the way, this debate has raged about PCI since it was released and has raged about every other regulatory regime related to IT I can recall. But right now it's kind of top of mind because of Target and others. There's a lot of people who are very quick to remind everyone that PCI is a minimum standard.
Right.
And that, you know, being PCI compliant doesn't mean that you are secure. It just means that you have implemented those specific controls, but you should go and figure out if there are unique things. And when I say it cuts both ways, I have seen instances where a management team will say, you know, we got over that PCI hurdle. And, you know, high fives all around, job done, we're not spending anymore.
But let me translate this for you. When I'm an executive, I hear this is the minimum. What I hear is, you know what, that's good enough. I can move on.
Absolutely.
Right? And a lot of executives have that mindset of what's the minimum I need to get by here, right? Companies don't go out and hire a ton of people unless they need them. They don't hire somebody unless they need them, typically, usually, right? The average company. And they're always looking at what is the minimum number of staff that maximizes my productivity and my profits. So same thing on InfoSec, right? If they say, hey, this is the minimum necessary, well, good. Now I know my baseline. That actually hurts us a little bit.
Exactly. That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
It's a tough problem, right?
It is.
Because, you know, now you have to go in and convince your management team that, well, that's not really what they meant. That's not what the PCI Council meant. They didn't mean that right. was the end, you know? And the PCI Council isn't really going to step up and defend you until you have a breach.
That's
and,
true.
And God damn it, when you have a breach, the PCI Council is going to be looking down their nose at you saying, you know what, that you're non-compliant. You really needed to do more.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, next thing I had on my notes here, and you kind of brought this up, is how you communicate is key. You know, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but I had just a couple other things here in my notes here that I wanted to bring up. You know, don't walk into a meeting throwing around three-letter acronyms and, you know, high-end InfoSec terms. You're going to come in sounding like a Cro-Magnon. SQL injection, bad. Website, down. Right? They're not going to respond well to that. They're not going to respond well to a big-ass report from an auditor. They don't have time. And if you're not speaking their language, they don't care. So one thing I would recommend here, and we talked about this briefly, is you're getting your social skills up, getting your communication skills up. Ways to do that, start doing public speaking, look into Toastmasters, look into reading intro to business books. You know, I read a really good book once about how to read financial statements for non-financial people. I read it at the time because I was trying to figure out how to do investing and that sort of thing. But the more you can learn their language, watch CNBC, you know, try to figure out how they talk and speak, not in any way to, you know, bedazzle them or to con them, but to translate your thinking into their language accurately and appropriately.
Yeah, and also to try to map what sometimes the insane things you see them doing into some kind of sensible order, right? So, right. You know, if you don't understand the context of business finance, you may not understand very well, at least, why certain decisions are made. But if you have a good concept of that, I mean, you don't need to, you know, get your MBA, right? But if you have some kind of concept of that, it may help you understand how they're allocating capital or how they have split their expense and capital budget or how they're trying to, you know, meet a certain level of profitability or they're trying to keep recurring costs low or they're trying to do something. And understanding what those objectives are, I think, helps you position whatever your proposal is because, you know, now you can maybe tailor the message of the risk based on the financial objectives of the company you can position the solution to be more in line with, you know, some sensibilities of the, you know, the financial regime of the company, you know, where they don't want to hire lots of people. They would rather outsource. So don't propose, you know, building a SOC. Maybe you should propose hiring a managed service company or something like that, you know, but understanding that context and having the business background, even a little bit, I think is going to help out a lot.
So it sounds like we've thrown a ton at you guys. And it's because it's a difficult problem. It's something we suck at. We're terrible as an industry at this. It's been a problem for a long time. I don't know if we have the best answers, like I said at the beginning. But this is at least what's on my list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody has to figure this out for themselves. I don't think there's any magic bullet. There aren't IT Sherpas running around giving presentations at Black Hat and DEF CON and B-Sides on how to talk to executives. This is a difficult problem.
Hey, there's a talk idea right there.
There we go. We just figured it out.
Next B-Sides, we're submitting it. But, you know, there are things out there that help, right? There are best practices. There are things you can talk. And by the way, I think this is an important question. I'm glad this guy asked this question because it is something we need to do better at as an industry. So anything else on your list?
No. Well, I guess the only other thing I'd say is there is another podcast. And, you know, I know I feel like a traitor here, but and I know the point of the question was to avoid the numbers game and whatnot. But there is another podcast right now, and they've actually got a kind of a crawl, walk, run series going. And that podcast is called the Risk Science Podcast. And it's run by a number of really, really bright guys and girls who are, you know, kind of into the whole actuarial quantification view of risk management. And I think right now, in particular, their last episode, they talked a lot about how you approach this problem without much data. Now, I don't think they offered any, you know, earth-shaking insights, but it's a really interesting view from people, in my mind, who are certainly much more astute at that than I am. And I mean, that's certainly something that I'm aspiring to be a whole lot better at than I am right now. But, you know, hey, the whole point of this podcast is to share information and make everybody better. We're not trying to hoard listeners. So, I mean, you know, there's eight, right? So,
right. The only thing I would caveat is sometimes data overload is not in your best interest. It depends on who you're talking to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. You know, especially if your CEO came from the sales side of the house, they might be more of a feelings people person, which is very weird to us. If you ever want an interesting study, go look at things like DISC, D-I-S-C, which is sort of like a personality trait and personality sort of ranking system and how people fall into these. And you'll see why different people react differently and communicate differently. And if you ever really want to get hardcore into understanding how to communicate well, part of it is understanding and identifying who it is you're talking to and where they fall in this sort of, in this particular system, the DISC system. What are they, a D, an I, an S, or a C, and how they like to be communicated to, what they respond to, right? So some may want data and PowerPoints and slides and, you know, 8x10 glossies with, you know, paragraph in the back and circles and lines. And hopefully somebody out there gets that reference. Or they may, you know, be a people feelings person. And, you know, you need to describe it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, this is kind of more advanced topic stuff. And, you know, this is covered in the 201 course. But just a little thing to throw out there.
No, that's a good point. It's a very good point. Again, I think it comes back to understanding the personalities that you have to work with. And it goes back to what you opened with, that, you know, security is very local. And part of that is the personalities.
That's true.
So anyway, I think we killed that one to death.
I think so. Should we call it a show and make it a special about risk communication?
Let's do that.
And, you know, then people can just download this podcast anytime.
Absolutely.
And not
share our insights. It'll be timeless.
So seriously, guys, if you agree, disagree, hated this, love this, think we're on drugs, drop us a line. Tell us what you think. Yeah. We love to hear back. You know, we're just doing this to avoid our significant others. I mean, spread love and knowledge and get better ourselves. You know, one thing doing this show, I've really had to refine and hone my skill set. So that's a good thing, right? You know, they say to really know something is to try to teach it.
Exactly.
And that's one thing that I'll say is that, you know, when I used to be a practitioner of security tools, I knew the tools really well. But I didn't know security as well as I know now, the big picture of security. So anyway, where I was going with that is that, you know, we hope this is valuable. And, you know, we're doing this just to do it for you guys. So tell us what you think.
Well, I just to carry on to that thought, right? Again, you know, we're not doing this podcast because we, you know, we want to enlighten the world with Jerry and Andy's, you know, super intelligence, right?
Wait a damn minute.
Oh, crap.
That's exactly what you told me when you invited me onto this. In fact, I've got it in writing.
Anyway, you know, we're happy to be wrong or we're happy to invite other ideas. And in particular, if you have a better idea, you know, again, the whole point of this is to, you know, one, get better myself and, you know, as you described, get better yourself, but also to help other people get better. I mean, I really feel like given the state of where InfoSec is right now, there's a lot of maturing that needs to happen. You know, there's a whole lot of development as an industry we need to go through. And so this is, in my mind, part of that process. So again, if you have any ideas that you think, you know, would be, you know, better than what we mentioned or in addition to, send us an email. The email is info@defensivesecurity.org. You know, even if you hate the idea, we're happy to happy to entertain it. We're not going to be offended. Well, maybe I will. I don't know, but anyhow, this was fun. And by the way, if you have any other big questions that you'd like us to talk about, you know, send them our way. Yeah. You know, this was good. It's always good to force us to get out of the box, right?
I would agree.
So, anyhow, with that, we will call it a week, and barring any other natural disasters, any other horrible earthquakes in the Atlanta area, or Ice Apocalypse 3, we will be back next week with some news stories.
Have a great week, guys.
Take care. Bye.